News of the war that had reached its 10th year, and of her husband Odysseus, whom she had not seen in all that time, but still she hesitated. Should I go now, mother? Asked the boy at her side, whose auburn hair she was twisting nervously with her slender fingers. I know children aren't allowed in the Carousia. This isn't a gathering of the council, Telemachus, she replied, looking down at her son and smiling. It's a private audience with the men who arrived today. They have news for me, and I have questions for them.
Then is it true they're Ithacans back from Troy?
Telemachus looked at his mother, and she caught a sudden glimpse of Odysseus in his clever green eyes. It made her catch her breath, and the only way she could prevent the swell of tears was to avert her gaze to the gloomy, torchlit corridor that led back into the palace. At 10 years old, her son had inherited little or nothing of his father's short-legged triangular bulk. Instead, he was already showing signs of his mother's height and lean build, as well as her dark, intelligent looks. But his eyes came from his father, and from time to time he would give her a shrewd look or cunning glance that brought memories of Odysseus into painful focus. After a moment, she looked back at her son and nodded.
Yes, Eurybates is your father's squire, and Arceisius is a member of the royal guard.
Telemachus's face flushed, and his eyebrows puckered angrily.
Why send a squire? Couldn't he have come himself?
No, my dear. His duty is to stay with the army until they defeat the Trojans and win Helen back from the man who took her. Besides, even if he could leave his men, I don't think he would.
But why?
Penelope looked at Telemachus, and there was a deep sadness in her eyes.
Because he would never be able to go back. Now come with me. I want Arceisius and Eurybates to see you with their own eyes, so they can let your father know what a strong and handsome son he has waiting for him at home.
She pushed the door open, and together they walked into the great hall. A fire burned brightly at its centre, casting a vigorous orange glow that fought against the encroaching shadows of night. Its light revealed colourful murals flowing across the white plaster walls, depicting figures of gods and men embroiled in acts of war and violence. Though each wall told a different story, they seemed to move effortlessly into each other, as if the struggles between gods and titans and the battles of men against each other were but one continuous tale. Smoke from the fire coiled up between the four pillars that supported the high ceiling, while around the burning hearth were 5 chairs, 4 of which were occupied. The men stood as Penelope entered.
Be seated, my friends, she ordered,
circling the hearth towards the fur-draped chair that had been left for her. They waited for her to sit down before lowering themselves into their own chairs. Last of all, Telemachus settled onto a fleece at his mother's feet, his inquisitive eyes roaming the faces of the men as he leaned his cheek against her knee. Penelope laid a hand on his head, drawing comfort from the softness of his hair, as she too looked at the seated figures. To her left was Mentor. His handsome face had a natural authority to it, and his muscular physique would have marked him as a warrior were it not for the leather-case stump of his missing right hand. There was a warm smile on his bearded lips, but Penelope could sense the concern behind it. Mentor was her chief advisor, and the closest thing she had to a friend ever since Odysseus had sailed to Troy. He knew her calm exterior was a facade, hiding the anxieties and uncertainties that were suddenly teeming within her after the arrival of the ships from Ilium. She may have fooled others with her display of regal restraint, bottling herself up in the palace and refusing to follow the crowds down to the harbour to hear the news from Troy, but not Mentor. Callithurses was to her right, his aging bulk so tightly packed into the high-backed chair that it seemed the arms would snap off at any moment. He was a veteran soldier, and had been a long-standing captain of the Royal Guard, though his mounting years and the scars of his many battles had prevented him from sailing with Odysseus to Troy. Instead, the king had given him joint stewardship of Ithaca, along with Mentor, to keep the island and its people safe in his absence. And they had not failed him, though the threats to the small kingdom were ever present and growing. Over the years, they had repulsed a handful of raids from the mainland, where groups of armed brigands were filtering down from the north, and the rule of law was faltering in the absence of the Greek kings. And then there was the internal menace of Ithaca's own nobles, whose increasingly audacious demands were voiced through the wealthy and treacherous Eupeithes. Odysseus had bought Eupeithes' loyalty many years before with a